without taking a lot of time, I would do a short homage, paying my respect to the Triple Gem Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and all the lineages of my gurus who have been so kind and blissful for my awakening and understanding and the knowledge that I have today. So with a visualization of all this, I may read a few verses before I start. Normally that's one of my tradition, and also to remember and create positive energies before we start. Now, today, the topic that we are... Can we listen properly? Are we listening? Okay. Today, the topic that we are going to talk is on yoga. So before we start the actual practice, we should understand what yoga really means. What yoga, how it was founded, and over the 1,000 years, how it has been like helping people, what are the causes of this yoga, and how we have to apply into day-to-day life, what are the effects, and why the yoga was formed, and so on. So with this understanding, if we practice yoga, then we have this complete understanding of the yoga, and we also understand what sort of yoga we are doing it at present, and how it will affect, and what are the ultimate goal of yoga. So with this understanding, if we practice, it makes more sense, it's more convincing for oneself that I'm on a right track, and this is the place what I am doing it, or this is the practice what I'm doing it. So rather than just taking it as a physical exercise, if we understand the actual meaning of yoga from the depth and then do the exercise, I think it makes better sense. So yoga literally means union, or to connect, or to merge. So, what do you mean by like merging or connecting? Here, yoga means to connect with the inner self. It is more to understand ourself from the deeper level. And when we understand from deeper level who we are, then we understand the whole world, the whole universe, because we are the microcosm of the universe, and universe is the macrocosm of self. So that is the purpose of life. Of course, the health, physical health, mental peace are also part of life. But since we have taken a lot of life after life, so many changes, immense, uncountable, what is the real purpose of life? And the real purpose of life is to understand oneself. In the sutras of the Veda, it mentions tattvamas, that means you are that. Literally, it means you are that, which means you are the pure consciousness. You are the Brahman. This may sound more like a religious teaching, but it is not. It is more of a science. There are religious aspects as well, but when we are talking about the union or the yoga, union towards our own self, that means we understanding who we are. So literally, yoga means to union. In a very simplified way, a way I would say, you are becoming more aware of self, and ultimately, you are understanding who you are. So by now, it might have been very surprising for some people who have the understanding of yoga before and now. So we cannot put the yoga just as a physical exercise. So I think we have to understand the ultimate goal of yoga, which is to union with self, to understand self from the deeper level. Now this is the literal meaning of yoga. The yoga, whole yoga practice, it all appeared, it starts from the Veda. It's a part of Veda. And Veda was started 5 to 7,000 before Christ era. So that means around the Golden Age era. So this was, this Veda, there are the Veda, the texts, mentions about all this yoga and other chakras and everything, you know. The whole Hindu mythology comes out of the Veda. And there are four Vedas. Four Vedas, Rig Ved, Sam Ved, Atharva Ved, and Yajur Ved, I think. So there are four Vedas, and the whole Vedas' core teaching lies at the end of the Vedic episode, which means the last part, the final part of the Veda, which is the end part of Veda, which is also known as the Vedanta, Vedanta. Ved means the scripture, the holy scripture, or the practice that the Hindu people do and follow. And Anta means the end. So Vedanta means the end of the Veda. So in that Vedanta, the Vedanta was described over a period of time by the masters to the disciple, masters to the disciple. And this process of giving teaching, the secret teaching of how to live a good life, how to connect with the society, how to see the inner world, how to understand the cosmic energy, how to understand the seven chakras and channels within oneself, how to understand the creation of the world. So these all teachings are in the end episode of the Veda, which is called Vedanta. And the process of giving from teacher to disciple, over and over, this is called the Upanishad. So that teaching, that process started maybe 2500 years back. So the Upanishad takes this process of teacher-disciple teaching process. It started around 2500 years back. So in this Upanishad, there are various sorts of Upanishad. And Upanishad literally means, Upa means vice, just like the president and vice president, principal and vice principal. So vice is next to or very near. And Nishad means to sit. So the disciple would sit near the guru and take all the teachings and the practices, the secret teachings. So this process has been known as Upanishad, and it was written over a period of time. So there are various sorts of Upanishads. And among this Upanishad, there is called Yoga Tattva Upanishad, which talks about all the yogas. Whatever yoga that the Hindu mythology or the Hindu practitioners does it, it lies in that Yoga Tattva Upanishad. Yoga Tattva means yoga is union, Tattva is element. Upanishad is getting from the teacher while you are sitting next to him. So that means you get all this secret teaching of yoga elements. And in that yoga element Upanishad, or that text, there are four types of yoga. The first one is mantra yoga, where a disciple would chant, and with that sound of different mantra chanting, it somehow creates different vibration where it tends to activate those central energy channels within oneself, and also activate the seven chakras. So in various different ways, a person gets more aware and more understandable in the conscious level, I would say, or in the intellectual level. And when a person is more deeper into the conscious level, there is a possibility of broad thinking, greater instinct, which is called the Kundalini Yoga, appearing or generating of the instinct itself is the Kundalini Yoga. There is no such thing called two serpents or the snakes just going around all the seven chakras that you might have seen. It's a symbol of Kundalini. It's not a serpent, it's your energy, which is like more like male energy and female energy. In the Taoism, they have yin and yang, sort of like that of energy, how you deal with and activate the seven chakras. Now, the first yoga that was the first yoga that I have said was mantra yoga, which has to do with the mantra chantings and activate the chakra. The second one is laya yoga, and laya yoga is also known as the Kundalini Yoga. The third one is Hatha Yoga, and you might have heard about the Hatha Yoga. This Hatha Yoga was introduced around 1890s by the Swami Vivekananda, who came from Calcutta, India, where I used to stay, so the same state. So he, when he came to West, he introduced, and it's very good that he came to Chicago and he expressed all these things. So we are somewhere like in the point. And the Hinduism like really flourished after coming to the Swami Vivekananda in 1890s in Chicago, where they were having a lot of like multi-religious conference or something, where he expressed all these things. And later on, he also introduced the Hatha Yoga. So when we talk about the Hatha Yoga, I just wanted to give these tips so that we are in Illinois. And it's great that after like maybe 100+ years, like we are talking about the Hatha Yoga once again and remembering who brought this back in, like in that time to US. So Hatha Yoga really deals with the physical exercises. And there is another, the fourth yoga, which is called Raja Yoga. Raja Yoga is considered the king of all the yogas. And the practice that we are going to do is the core of this Raja Yoga. We are not doing Hatha Yoga, we are not doing Mantra Yoga, we are not doing Kundalini Yoga. But of course, if we understand the Patanjali Yoga, that is the core teaching of the Raja Yoga. And among these four yogas, the Raja Yoga is the supreme. That's called Royal Yoga or the King Yoga, king of all the yogas. So now, when we have to go through this Raja Yoga, and the essence lies in the Patanjali Yoga. And this Patanjali was a great master who introduced this the core essence of the Raja Yoga, which even today back in India, like a lot of people are following it. So this Patanjali Yoga started around 200 years before Christ era, so around the Buddha's time, I think, just right after the Buddha's time, 2400 years about. So in this, they have vortex and eight practices, eight limb practice or eightfold practices, just like in Buddhism we have. So the four texts talks about how to do the practice and defining all this thing, and we have eight practices, and the eight practices or the key practice of the Raj Yoga, which is the Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, and we have Pratyahara, we have Dharana, we have Dhyana, and Samadhi. So these are the eight aspects or the practices that that is the core practice of the Raja Yoga in the Patanjali Yoga. So now when we have to talk with this eight limbs of practice or eightfold practice of the Raja Yoga or the Patanjali Yoga, the first is the Yama, and the Yama talks about how to deal with the society, like respecting, compassion, not stealing. It's just like sort of like seven sins that you don't have to do in Christian philosophy. So something like that. But it, the whole thing of the Yama practice is non-violence and not being too possessive, and austerity and celibacy and all these things. So the first is the Yama practice, and then the second one is the Niyama. Niyama is now the practice is not the not concentrated on the objects, but it's more subject, you know, like more subjective. So cleanliness and tidiness of the body, and having good behavior, and these things like, and the practices, all this matters subjectively. So it's on under the practice of Niyama. It is more how to deal with oneself, you know, like how to deal with the body and speech and so on. Then there is another practice, the third one is the Asana. Now, here comes the asana, is the postures that you see in the yoga centers. That's the asana. Now, in the asanas, there is a Hindu mythology which talks once the Lord Shiva's wife or the consort who was Parvati. Parvati asks Lord Shiva that how many asanas are there in the yoga? And he says, there are 8,400,000 postures, asanas. And then she was really shocked. And he says, how come 8,400,000? He says, asana is exactly there are 8,400,000 species, you know, the living species. So every species has one asana. So you might have seen like people doing like this, it's like Makara Asana, which is called crocodile posture, you know. And then like there is like Shavasana, which is called dead body asana. So it's just like a person that like the dead body, you know, lying down on his back. So these like 8,400,000 species, so we have 8,400,000 asanas. So the consort asks Lord Shiva again that, How can a practitioner practice all these postures, because it's too many. So can we make it more concise to practice? And then he came under in few hundreds. And then even few hundreds seem to be like too much. Normal person cannot do. So he slashed down into again like 84 that normally like, you know, people used to do. So 84, and even 84 was too much. So she finally was asking, like, is there any like asanas like lesser than 84, or make it something like all in one? And Lord Shiva looked at her, and since she was the beloved one, so like, okay, yes, of course, why not? We can make it to one, like one for all. And that is the Siddha Asana, which is called the blessing asana, or the posture which where a person sits like this, the right on the and in between of the thigh and the calf, ankle to ankle, heel to heel. So this is called the Siddha Asana. So he says, the Lord Shiva says, if you stay in the Siddha Asana, you are doing 84, it's equivalent to 8400,000 asanas. So, generally, it doesn't make much sense, because you see over the yoga centers, there are so many different postures for back, for neck, for, I don't know, eyeballs or anything like that. So, there are so many asanas, you know, even like the fingernails. So, there are so many asanas. And how can that posture be like one for all? You know, how can that cover all the benefits? Now, over the period, like a long time, there has been a lot of masters, the yogis, who have been doing this, and then they found that with the scientific research, I guess, they found that if a person stays in the Siddha Asana for 3 hours and 21 minutes without movement, the first Muladhara Chakra from the below, which is next near the genital organ, it starts activating. You know, one of my yoga master, he activated it, and he was telling it that to me, and he said the moment when it activates, the first symptom is one will have a very gentle fragrance. You know, one can smell the fragrance without any flower, without any incense or perfume. You know, you start to have that sense, and gradually we can stay in that level for longer period, then we overcome another, we activate the second chakra and then third chakra and then the fourth chakra. So because of that, you might have heard like the yogis staying still for long period. So it's something like heating up a car, you know, to move on. So in the winters, you have to heat the car for a certain period of time, then you can move on. So similarly, if a yogi starts doing the meditation and sitting in that posture, trying to charge himself, and then move on to the life, then it makes a greater, how you say, impact to self and to the society. So therefore, still meditation means a lot, even in back in India or scientifically. Now, we have talked about Yama, Niyama, then we're talking about the third one, which is called the asana. So this all came related with the asana. I'm going to summarize it once again before I wrap up and we have question and answer session. So even though this sounds really complicated, and when I wrap up, it makes a sense. And why I'm telling all these things, going all like with this old series, is because I want you all to understand what yoga really means. So please don't limit it. Yoga is just asanas. So we are talking, all these things I've been talking is yoga, you know. So the yama is also yoga, niyama is also yoga. Dealing how to deal with the society becomes a yoga, part of yoga. You know, so how to deal with oneself becomes a part of yoga. Then asana also becomes a yoga. And then the fourth one is the pranayama. The pranayama is prana, means breath or life. Literally it means life. But of course the breath is life. Once the breath is gone, stopped, that means you are dead. Right? So, in that way, the prana is very important. Now let me give you some understanding on the prana. We all tend to do exercise, physical exercise, and then nutrition, diet, and all this, you know, it pops up every now and then in the internet. Like, the moment you click, there is like a big size man, and then go before and after, you know. And I don't know, like for me, I think I was before and after. Was like this. So the other way around. So anyway, so the thing is, the pranayama, we tend to give a lot of attention to the physical body, which is gross. We tend to give a lot of attention to the food and nutrition, which is also gross. Now, a little bit subtle is we don't take care of the water. We don't take water. Instead of water, we go for coffee, Starbucks. So now here in the pranayama, why the prana is so important, I'm going to that point. So before that, I start from the physical like health that we take care of, nutrition and physical exercise, which is very gross. We have to, the subtler than the first is to take care of the water. Even in our body, the 70%, you know, more than 70% is water, the liquid. But we don't take care of that. We take care more of flesh, you know. You see? And water becomes more important. And more than the water, the subtlest is the air. And if you see how important food, water, and air, the air is the most important. Let me give you an example. A person cannot die without food. In 10 days, without food, 10, 15 days, he can exist. Without food, just by having water. But without water, in 3 days, he is dead. A person cannot survive. And what about the air? You die in 3 minutes. But our way of looking things, the priority setting is the other way around. We look so much of food and this the gross body, too much attention, and then we neglect the water, and then there are people like who wants to carry like that bottle and have water. But breathe is like, oh, it's ongoing things, like we don't have to bother about the breath. Imagine, that's why breath is called life. It is subtle, it is not gross, it is subtle, and it is neglected, I tell you. So why this pranayama is all dealing with the breath now? Actually, sometimes human being, human nature, sometimes very funny. We call ourselves the superior being on the planet. But I'm sorry to say, don't get me wrong, we don't even know how to breathe. Had it been something like we know how to breathe, I don't think like we will have a lot of ailments. Asthma, migraine pain, skin disease, heart attack, and like pancreas issue, liver issue, like reproductive issues, bone marrow issues. Let me give you another example. You see, our body is made out of cell. We call it like it's made out of bone marrow, whatever. But if you see in the deeper level, it's made out of cell. What does the cell need? Nutrition and air. Nutrition, we are always inputting more or less, whether it's McDonald's or a KFC or whatever. We are putting in, but what about the air, you know? There are high tendencies that we always squeeze our lungs. We don't sit like this. And why are we encouraged to stay our spinal cord straight in the meditation? Not because that Buddha did so and then we are just following him because we like the Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama or so on. Not because of that. There is a scientific reason, because when the spinal cord is straight, you expand your lungs more. So rather than bending front, bend behind, better. You know? Put some cushion, be in the sofa, but be healthy. So there is a high expansion. You can do like instant research. You sit like this and you try to breathe in, the breath is always little compared to you sit like this and breathe. Okay? And another reason is 70 to 80% of whatever the oxygen is taken by the lungs is supplied to the brain. You see? It's taken by the brain and then to nervous system and other things. So the more brain gets oxygen, your migraine is gone. Remember that. I know a lot of people have migraine pain. There is a very good saying in the doctor's book. They say there are two types of illness. One is vertical illness and one is horizontal illness. So like we see a lot of people like us. We look very healthy. We are in a vertical stage. And we have like some skin problems, some asthma problems, some heart problems, some eye retinal problems, some eardrum problems, some organ problems. But we are in a vertical. We are taking tablets and we are doing our work. That's called vertical illness. And as it grows or develops, we'll come to the horizontal illness, lying on the bed, in the ICUs, you know. Or maybe I don't see you. So therefore, like it all starts from the vertical illness to horizontal illness. Therefore, most of the people are horizontal illness status. You see? And then we have a lot of prawns, you know, like prone to cancer, prone to hepatitis, prone to this, prone to that, prone to a lot of things. We are already in that stage. So how to maintain that? How to preserve that? How to overcome that? So with the practice of pranayama, we are giving the whole body cell, the neurons and the body cell, a lot of oxygen. And because of a lot of oxygen in our body cell, we have, the immune system starts working properly. And there are like various different definitions which I don't want to go too long with this, as if we are talking about medical science or so on. So, but little understanding of medical science is very important before we do the pranayama. So by now you might have understood when we do the priority setting, our priority setting is upside down. We start from the food and then we have water and then the breath is never taken care of. Now, when we flip this, that's the real, the right way. So the air comes the first. So in the Vedas, like 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 years back, they have expressed all this because they tend to understand it, I would say, they realize it. But somehow we didn't put it into the practice, even in the East. Now with the health, a lot of health ailment issues, now even back in India, they are trying to do the pranayamas. And now, yama, niyama, asana, and then the pranayama. So that's why we are here. I'm trying to teach pranayama. It's easy to practice. Why it is easy? Because sick people can do, unhealthy people can do, healthy people can do, children can do, old age people can do. It's applicable. And it is very easy to practice. And over the research back in India with a lot of scientists, they found over this 15 to 20 years of research, pranayama are more effective than the asanas. And it is more easier to do than the asanas. Imagine. So this is something scientifically approved thing. So over like lots and lots. And only in India, by doing the pranayama, they have a record that 250 million people have benefited. And among that 250 million people, I'm one of them. My father is another one of them. So we did it and we found the result as well. And I even checked with my organs before coming to United States. My organs, internal organs, is 97% okay. So I checked with all the liver, pancreas, digestive system, respiratory, everything. So that is the guarantee we need, you know. I have all the doctor records. So these are the benefits that one needs to see. You know, we just don't talk all this mythology, but the effect needs to be seen. So therefore, what I believe before giving this, I believe that it could be helpful, but I know very little basic, but I think that basic is more than enough for us who are working, you know. And this could really like bring changes into life, the attitude, and so on. And it will also help the person build concentration, and it will also self-discipline over the period of time. Like a lot of people back in India used to smoke and drink. A lot of people, like maybe like hundreds and thousands of people, you know, like they have quit smoking, tobacco, alcohol. Yeah. And then they come in front of like thousands of people and there is a live show going on and then they come with that. And they cry, they feel like, oh, this tradition was 9,000 years old, already there. We now understand. You know, so lots of people. But don't have high expectation, practice. So even my father's case, which he has this dizziness, every morning and afternoon, he has very bad dizziness. There are like various doctors have various ideas. He did Chinese medicine, acupuncture, even the herbal Tibetan medicine, the antibiotic medicines. He went to optical to see whether it's the eye problem. So he continued for like 15 to 20 years taking pills, like 2-3 years, this practice, that clinic. So he spent a lot of time, money, energy into that. One day, I told him that you should do the pranayama. You don't have to do it. You don't have to like do it for the whole rest of your life. Just do it for 3 months, I told him. Because I don't want to ask him to do for whole life. That would be too much in the beginning. And he may not practice. He may just drop that idea. So I said, continue with whatever like the medicine practice that you are doing it. You can take that pills or whatever. But just do this. And he did it. And he did it for 3 months. There was a little bit of recovery. And I didn't say anything. After that, he continued another 3 months. And it was much better. So he continued for 1 year. And like 90% of his giddiness is gone, which was never gone in that 15 years of medication. And in 1 year, he could overcome. And 1.5 year, 101% gone. No more. And he used to wear a spec. And he says his eyesight at the age of 55, and now he's 70, his eyesight is better now. That's not a miracle out of prayers, I'm telling you. That's a miracle out of your own practice. I won't even say that's a miracle, that's a science. You know? There is two ways of understanding science. S-I-G-N-S is also science. So many signs of improvement. See? So therefore, with this, experiences, I thought it could help you more or less, you know. Even though you're going through treatment, that's fine. You go on with the treatment, or even if you're going through the chemo also, it doesn't matter. But do these practices, and make sure what ailments you have so that I give the proper proper guidance, what you should do, which pranayams need to be avoided for a time being or so on. So anyway, now we have these eight limbs of practice in the Patanjali. The practice is Yama, Niyama, Asana, and the Pranayama. Now, the other four practice is Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. Now, Pratyahara means not reacting, dropping your senses from the sensual object. That means, in short way, we could say like we are not reacting. We are not reacting with the sensual objects. Let's say if I see this watch, I'm not saying, oh, this is watch, nice, good. They're not playing around the games. You're just seeing the watch, that's it. You're not playing the sensual games like, oh, this is good. Oh, I could have that one. Maybe this is looking similar to my brother's watch or something like that, you know. Not playing around the intellectual games or conscious games. So, not playing with the senses, I would say. Pratyahara is dropping the senses or not reacting. And we have this dharana, which talks about how to focus on the object, one object, like a deity or like a candle, you know. Then you tend to sit and then meditate, focus on it, not running around here and there consciously. And that's called the pratyahara, the stability or single-minded meditation. That also is a yoga. And then there is another practice which is called the dhyana, that is the meditation. And here the understanding of meditation needs to be a little bit elaborated, clarified. The same single-pointed meditation, when it becomes matured or when you are used to it, you know, then that part, that standard of meditation, the used to or the matured meditation where you can keep that in a single-pointed mind, when you come to that level, that's called the dhyana. And then there is the final one, which is called the samadhi. It's to become union with self, to understand self, or sometimes it could be the union with the God. The union with the God. And what do you mean by God? In the Hindu mythology, it's very beautifully defined. God means G-O-D. That means the generator, the operator, and the destroyer. You generate, you operate, and then you die. That means every cell is generating, operating for a time being, and it dies. Similarly, our body also generates in the mother's womb, and it operates over a lifespan of 60, 70, 80, 90, and then it drops. So we are talking about an energy. So when we talk about his spirit, when we talk about God, here we are talking about the energy that runs, you know, that makes it decay. How can a body decay? For decaying, it needs some energy for decaying also. So anyway, so here it's dealing with that things, like the union with the God or that ultimate energy or the source within oneself, which we sometimes talk about the Buddhahood within oneself. So it's similar to that energy. What is Buddha? Buddhahood also is an energy which can eliminate all the disturbance and the weaknesses of the mind or the ignorance. Or we can say another way, pure instinct. Pure instinct is also an energy. So, now we understood that, now let me summarize once again before I become, go on and on, make it more complicated. Here we talk about the yoga. Yoga literally means union, to understand self. And when we understand ourselves, we understand the whole universe. And we have better relationship, we have better understanding, we are more peaceful, we are more happy. So isn't that a very beautiful life? So, and we eliminate all those negative forces that disturbs our mind or that overtakes our pure conscious. Anyway, to union with oneself, to go into deeper. And this yoga, the introduction of yoga, is done in the Vedas. And then the Vedas were 7,000 to 5,000 years before the Christ era, which comes around 9,000 years ago. And there are four Vedas, and then the core teaching of the Veda lies in the end episode of Veda, which is called Vedanta. And then this Vedanta described from master to disciple, master to disciple, descendant, and then it was written, is called the Upanishad. And in the Upanishad, there are various types of Upanishad, and among that Upanishad, there is a Upanishad called Yoga Tattva Upanishad, union element Upanishad, where all the yogas are mentioned. And there are four types of yoga: mantra yoga, laya yoga, Raja yoga is the highest of it. Yes, we have hatha yoga. Thank you. This is called mindfulness. So we have this hatha yoga, and the Raja yoga is the king of all the yogas. And the core teaching of the Raja yoga is mentioned by the Patanjali yoga, in the Patanjali yoga sutra, I would say, the text. And in the Patanjali yoga sutra, there are four texts and four practice, I would say four texts and eight limbs practice. And among that eight limb practice, which is yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, and then pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and the samadhi. The four limbs practice, the first four, which is yama, niyama, asana, and the pranayama, is the initial level of practice. Remember this. It is to condition oneself. It is to make the foundation so that the person can do the four other yanas, yogas, which is pratyahara, dhyana, and so on. You see? So the ultimate goal is to come to the samadhi. Remember, the samadhi is the ultimate point of the yoga practice. And here, samadhi means to union with self. You got it? So, on the way to get union, on that process, on the way we get health, physical health, we get mental peace, and then union is the spirituality. And always remember, these are the three phases that we have to go. We need physical health, mental peace, and then only there is a possibility of spirituality. Otherwise, spirituality seems a funny game. No one likes it. So, even those bombers in Boston, if you talk and preach, they're going to hit you back, I tell you. No, because there is no mental peace. You need certain amount of physical health and mental peace in order to progress in spirituality. Before that, you give the spirituality, that's wrong. That's going to be totally wrong process. So, physical health, and then mental peace, and then the spiritual growth. There is a possibility. And as you see these eight limbs, the first they're talking about asana, pranayama, to have a good body, and then the good mind, you know, mental peace, and then some sort of good relationship with oneself and the society, where yama and niyama talk. And then one day there is a possibility of dhyana, dharana, and then the samadhi. Am I clear with that? Now, with this understanding now, if we practice, then I think even those coming from the Christian background, Muslim background, everyone can do yoga. Because the ultimate is to connect with the God, or Allah, or the Buddha, whatsoever. So to connect with self, to discipline oneself, with the society, oneself, and have good health. Good mental health as well. Everyone needs, despite any religion or non-believers. It doesn't matter. It's a human right. It's a human nature, origin, I would say, to be happy and to be peaceful. No one would say that, I want no peace. I want frustration. I love frustration. No one would say. I tell you, whether this is a believer or non-believer, whether this comes from this religion, that religion, it doesn't matter. No one will say, I love cancer. I love hepatitis. I love AIDS, HIV. No one would say that. No one likes it. I love pain. No one would say that, whether it is physical or mental. So these things are, how you say, conditioned in a... Or we, by doing the yoga practice, we are becoming more healthy and happy. And then maybe while chanting, we have less irritation. Maybe meditation, less irritation. Otherwise, no mental peace and no physical health, I think you go down. Your productivity goes down. So because of that, the four limb practice first, kept first, seriously. They keep first, which is also related with the Hatha Yoga, the first four. And the second four is to more focus on the mind rather than body, speech, and relationship around. So I think it might have made a little bit deeper understanding before coming to class. I don't know what expectation the yoga you might have in. Now it's more like quite different from what you might have understood. Am I right? It's making more deeper and broader understanding. So this is yoga. So don't expect like yoga is only like the postures. So yoga is also the yama and niyama, where it talks about how to deal with the society. So how can that be a yoga? How can that be a union? You are united with the positive attitude. Isn't that a yoga? Now sort of like our attitude, honesty, maybe sort of like disconnected. So we are trying to connect with it. Isn't that a yoga? We're merging it. So I think our time is up, so we have like 1 hour. This is a 1 hour talk, so I'll give half an hour to make me understand how much you have understood. So thank you for giving this opportunity, and also thank you that you came here, and whatever the little merit that we have, let us dedicate it, and after the dedication you can do the question answers. Is that okay? Okay, I'll do the dedication verse, and we have half an hour question answer. Jambo bun jendra jambo dong gundo zambo dian de jin de da bun je je zon da lo jin je wa de da dong je ro dong de zon je bi je wa dong je jin mo ga lo je dong ba de da ji ji wi za wa de jin Sambo jujira dungo re